Translation. Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva, and therefore he is Ekavarna, the Omkar Pranav. Because the Lord is beyond the cosmic manifestation, which is considered to be darkness, he is not visible to material eyes. Nonetheless, he is not separated from us by time or by space, but is present everywhere. Seated on his carrier Garuda, he is worshipped by means of mystical yogic power by those who have achieved freedom from agitation. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Purport. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabdiktam. Bhagavatam 4.3.23. In this material world, the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, prevail. Among these three, goodness is the platform of knowledge, and passion brings about a mixture of knowledge and ignorance. But the mode of ignorance is full of darkness. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond darkness and passion. He is on the platform where goodness or knowledge is not disturbed by passion and ignorance. This is called the Vasudev platform. It is on this platform of Vasudev that Vasudev, or Krishna, can appear. Thus, Krishna appeared on this planet as the son of Vasudev. Because the Lord is situated beyond the three modes of material nature, he is unseen by those who are dominated by these three modes. One must therefore become dhīra, or undisturbed by the modes of material nature. The process of yoga may be practiced by one who is free from the agitation of these modes. Therefore, yoga is defined in this way. Yoga indriya samyama. As previously explained, we are disturbed by the indriyas or senses. Moreover, we are agitated by the three modes of material nature, which are imposed upon us by the external energy. In conditional life, the living entity moves turbulently in the whirlpool of birth and death. But when one is situated on the transcendental platform of Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits on the back of Garuda. Lord Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Lord. Omagyana Timurandasyakinachana Shalakya. Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual masters are opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and therefore offer my humble obeisances unto them. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishnam Stai Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swaminita Namani. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishnam Stai Bhutale Srimate Hridayananda Goswaminita Namani. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishnam Stai Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminita Namani. Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani pracharane nirvishesha shunyavadi paskita adhishtane. Mukham karoti vachalam pangam langai te grim yat kripata maham vande shri gurundina tarnam. Vande shri krishna chaitanya nityananda sahodito godadaya pushpanvanto chitra shanda tamonado. Offer my humble obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have arisen over the horizon of Godadesh, just like the sun and the moon, to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Ya ekavarnam tamasa param tad alokam avyaktam ananta param asam chakaro pasuparnamenam upasate yoga ratena dhira. Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva, and therefore he is Ekavarna, the Omkar Pranav. Because the Lord is beyond the cosmic manifestation, which is considered to be darkness, he is not visible to materialize. Nonetheless, he is not separated from us by time or space, but is present everywhere. Seated on his carrier Garuda, he is worshipped by means of mystical yogic power by those who have achieved freedom from agitation. Let us all offer our respectful obeisances unto him. In order to give a little more background, I'm just going to read a little bit from the purport of this verse that's quoted. Prabhupada in the purport begins the purport with this famous first line, Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabdikam. The translation of that verse that begins with Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabdikam is, I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure Krishna consciousness in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudev, is revealed without any covering. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, the living entity is constitutionally pure. In the Vedic literature, it is said that the soul is always pure and uncontaminated by material attachment. The identification of the body with the soul is due to misunderstanding. As soon as one is fully Krishna conscious, it is to be understood that one is in his pure, original, constitutional position. This state of existence is called Shuddha Sattva, which means that it is transcendental to the material qualities. Therefore, Shuddha Sattva, as described in this verse, is the transcendental position, which is technically called Vasudev. Vasudev is also the name of the person from whom Krishna appears. This verse explains that the pure state is called Vasudev, because in that state, Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed without any covering. To execute unadulterated devotional service, therefore, one must follow the rules and regulations of devotional service without desire to gain material profit by fruitive activities or mental speculation. And other parts of this purport echo what we've just been reading in this verse and purport. For instance, Prabhupada says further on, Krishna's form, quality, paraphernalia, etc., being transcendental, are beyond material nature. It is not possible to understand any one of them with the material senses. But when the senses are purified by the discharge of devotional service, the pure senses can see Krishna without covering. So just to clarify, when the word Vasudev is pronounced with the first A elongated, it has the diacritic on top of it, and is pronounced Vasudev, that's referring to Krishna. And when it's just saying Vasudev, that's referring to Krishna's father. So there's that important distinction there. And also the word Vasudev means the state of pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva. So Krishna's coming or manifesting from that state of Shuddha Sattva, Vasudev. The theme I'm going to try and key into here is this point about to execute unadulterated devotional service, therefore, one must follow the rules and regulations of devotional service without desire to gain material profit. Okay, the profit motive. Is there anything wrong with the profit motive? Actually, there isn't anything wrong with it per se, because we're all trying to profit ourselves. We're here to profit ourselves, to benefit ourselves, to make advancement, to improve ourselves, to make transcendental profit. That's really what we're here for. Nothing wrong with it per se, but when you try and make And when you do that, when you're trying to make profit on this transcendental platform, you're not disturbing the balance of the universe. Because you're beyond the modes, and you're not disturbing the balance of the universe. It's only when you try and make profit on a material level beyond your quota, as it states in the Ishopanishad, Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagacham jikat tena chatena bunjita magridakasya sviddhanam. There it is saying that Krishna, and the verse, of course, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, Purnam Purnamivachate, etc., Udachate. It's saying that everything is balanced. Everything's perfect and complete, and everything's balanced. And when you exceed your quota, what's rightfully yours, what's been allocated to you as your quota, according to who you are, according to your individuality, you're given certain facilities, certain opportunities, a certain space in the universe to express yourself in. And as soon as you exceed that boundary of your space and intrude upon somebody else's space and impose upon somebody else's space, take away somebody else's opportunity so that it seems you've got more for yourself, as soon as you do that, then you trigger off the chain of karmic reaction and you start to become covered and you start to see the world through your coverings. You start to see the world in a distorted way. You're no longer in harmony with your environment. Problems. You no longer see Krishna's arrangement. So that becomes a problem. And that's, that's how the thought processes work on the material level. That it's a dog-eat-dog world, nice guys finish last, etc. It's competition. They say this survival of the fittest. You've got to get out there and you've got to hustle. Otherwise, you're going to get left behind. And, on a material level, there's something to be said of that. Because that just seems to be the nature of life in the material world. You see in animal life that might means right. But that's animal life. That's not civilized life. The Vedas explain what is civilized life for the human form. And in the human form, we have more refined intelligence. We can understand the interconnectedness of everything. This notion of profit and how it works. Just one moment. So I was thinking how this notion of profit works I'm trying to recall it now, this example. Sorry, I'm just kind of a blank on my train of thought. Okay, just in seeing Krishna's arrangement, if you don't see Krishna's arrangement, all you can see is this profit and loss syndrome. And when you see Krishna's arrangement, there's a different notion of how, of profit. So if we see, sometimes, this is that's right, now I've remembered, I'm sorry. One of the most difficult things for a devotee is to understand when something is Krishna's arrangement and when it's not Krishna's arrangement. For instance, if a devotee criticizes us, or when somebody is pointing out that we have some, you know, material attachment, or we've acted wrongly, or we've been, you know, exhibiting some symptoms of ignorance, it's being pointed out to us. Now, when this person who's pointing it out to us has been designated by Krishna to actually enlighten us, to relieve us of a burden, to help us and to benefit us, to profit us, to help us become profited. When to know that is Krishna's arrangement, and when to know that actually it's not Krishna's arrangement. This person has no foundation for what they're saying. I mean, ultimately everything is Krishna's arrangement. But to know when this person is actually trying to exploit us, is trying to wrongfully take advantage of us, and I must defend myself and defend my position as a devotee and as a representative of Prabhupada, to know the difference is sometimes very difficult. Because if we have a superficial understanding of what constitutes Krishna's arrangement, we may mistake, like I said, something that's, we may not recognize when it's this person trying to exploit, you know, myself and the movement for Krishna consciousness. And we may think, oh, it's Krishna's arrangement, I'll take the humble position. For instance, when in the pastime of Prabhupada in Bombay, when this man, his name started with N, I can't remember his
Naya.
Naya. Prabhupada didn't think, oh, this Naya has been designated by Krishna, you know, but some of the devotees thought that. And they were allowing this person to actually steamroller them and just rip them off, basically. But Prabhupada didn't see that. He saw it differently, that this person is one of these, like I said earlier on, he's trying to usurp. He's trying to take what's not his, what doesn't belong to him. You know, Krishna has his arrangement, and this person is trying to alter Krishna's arrangement for his own nefarious ends. So that's how Krishna saw that, Prabhupada saw that. Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. This person's trying to take something that's not his. Right? Now, other times, a person may approach us and say to us, you know, something subtle, you know, something that, you know, this doesn't belong to you and you should not have used it. It may even be something subtle like, you know, it wasn't your position to say this or to do this. The right to say or do that didn't belong to you. You shouldn't have done that. They may say that. They may approach us and say that. And we may think, well, you know, who's this person? You know, is this Krishna's arrangement that I'm being told this? Or is this person just having a go, having a cheap shot and trying to, you know, be lording it over me with their ego. What's going on? Is it Krishna's arrangement or is it this person on an ego trip? It's sometimes not easy to actually be able to tell what's Krishna's arrangement and what's not. Because we get into trouble whenever we see something as Krishna's arrangement when it's not. And we get into trouble whenever we don't see something as Krishna's arrangement when it is. In both cases, we're going to trigger off the karmic reactions. We're no longer going to be transcendental. It says here you have to be without agitation. We're going to get agitated whenever we make that mistake. So then a question arises sometimes when it is Krishna's arrangement, and something's being pointed out to me, something about my material attachments, about my maya, about my ignorance. It's being pointed out to me. I don't like hearing it because it's a shakedown. It means I've got to start dismantling something that I've become attached to. And I've been attached to this for a long time. And I've, put it together over the course of a long time. This person's telling me it's maya and I should dismantle it and get on with my Krishna consciousness. What am I going to do? So we have two options. One option is to dismantle the person's argument. And the other option is to get down to the nitty-gritty, roll up our sleeves, and dismantle our attachments. Right? Now, in the short term, it's going to be easier to dismantle the person's argument. And that's often what happens. That's often what happens, we say to them all sorts of things, we say to them stuff like, well, I don't like the way you're telling me this, or you don't like me, or things like that, without addressing the actual veracity of that point that they're making, that whether the relative, how true is it what they're saying. So when we decide that we're going to dismantle the argument, we're trying to make a sort of a very miserly profit, that it's less work to dismantle this person's argument than it is to actually address my issues. That's a lot more work. So it's a profit calculation. There's one saying that a coward dies 100, Shakespeare, I think, dies 100 times, and a hero dies but once, or tastes of death but once. So why, what happens is that when it is Krishna's arrangement, Krishna wants us to become purified. So when it is Krishna's arrangement, even if we dismantle this messenger of Krishna's argument, when we dismantle it, it's not all over, because Krishna sends somebody else and you have to die again. And then Krishna sends somebody else and it keeps recurring. Actually, as long, it'll keep recurring until at one point, if you're intelligent and you do your accounts, you'll realize that actually, it's more energy defending myself, and it's more energy dismantling these, constant recurring, communications, than it is if I had just started dismantling the problem in the first place. Excuse me. So that's an important point, to consider. Maybe we need a little, it's all time and circumstance, of course, but we may need a little bit of time to reflect and to think about something. That's okay. But don't lose sight of the goal, which is to become purified and free of our false ego and become an instrument in Krishna's hands, because that's ultimately the goal. So we see that sometimes this is important, because everything comes back to the state of balance. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. That's why, because everything comes back to the state of balance, that's why if we do some sort of self-justification, some defense against when Krishna's trying to communicate to us and enlighten us, if we do that defending, it's no good. Because everything comes back to a state of balance. So until we dismantle what's that problem that's keeping us out of balance, until we dismantle it, the universe continually, wave after wave, keeps sending the next communication and the next communication until we're back into balance. Because that is natural. Whatever's artificial cannot be maintained, and whatever is natural is the ongoing situation, is reality. So whenever there's something artificial there within our hearts, some anatta, it's going to have to go sooner or later. Inevitably, we have to let it go. Otherwise, we keep on getting the waves of material energy hitting and crashing on top of us. Krishna does it very gently, of course. You know, to his devotees, it's always done in the kindest possible way. And as long as we chant Hare Krishna, we remain flexible, and we remain malleable. And we're always flexible and malleable and then capable of taking that step of purification, of dismantling the false ego. Krishna's always giving us beautiful, gentle, kind, personal direction. What is the next step in dismantling the false ego? As long as we chant Hare Krishna, stay in the association of devotees, and maintain a correct attitude. The wrong attitude, and what more or less is like a spanner in the works, is my understanding is when there are two extreme mentalities. One is when there is arrogance that precludes being able to take good direction. Being proud, being arrogant. But what's sometimes neglected is when somebody is excessively... So that one is when they're excessively proud. The other is when somebody's excessively and falsely humble. Both of them preclude against the devotee making advancement. And both of them mean that, you know, one is arrogant, one is overly and falsely humble. So they're both artificial conditions, and they often result in their direct opposites. The person who is being falsely humble, who is being, in a sense, repressive, who's repressing themselves, who's in denial, ends up at some point becoming very much the other way, angry, volatile, and, you know, just it will come out. And the person who's being very arrogant, when they're, you know, there's one... I can't remember the Bengali, one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says that Agya Jiva Nija Hite. Agya Jiva Nija Hite. Hite is the word for benefit. Agya means ignorance. Jiva. That person who is ignorant or who was overly proud, they cannot see their true benefit. But it says Agya jivaniji hitya ahite kariman garvacharna haile pasha ugadenayan. But when their, it says when their pride is humbled, only then are they able to see their true benefit. So we see very proud people end up being humbled by the material energy. And we see humble people, not in the pure sense of, and in the positive sense, but in the negative sense, people who are in denial and who are repressed, we see that they often become very, very angry, and there's this oscillation, this kind of the pendulum swings all the way to the other side. And it's because everything has to come back to balance. If someone is arrogant and they come and they meet a devotee, and the devotee explains to them transcendental knowledge, it's possible that they don't have to, the pendulum doesn't have to swing all the way to them becoming crushed and humbled by the material energy. Because they meet someone who has transcendental knowledge, when they realize the artificiality of their platform of arrogance, they can just come back to the balanced position and be transcendental, because they've met somebody who's transcendental. Similarly, someone who's repressed and who's in denial, who's falsely humble, if they meet a devotee, they can, the pendulum doesn't have to swing all the way to here where they're sort of angry at everybody and bursting out with frustration. They can also just come back to this transcendental position, because that's what's required to, as it says here, to be free from agitation. It's like the position of being, it's the transcendental position that all devotees are seeking. So the last point I'll make is that environment is so important, that we are in an environment which is conducive to being transcendental, to making advancement. In the Bhagavad Gita, yesterday I was reading with some friends, and Prabhupada was saying in a purport that in a rice paddy, he was talking about the battlefield of Kurukshetra being Dharmakshetra, a place of pilgrimage, an environment of, a religious environment. And he was saying that because this environment was dharmic, therefore those who were adharmic would not be able to survive in that atmosphere. And therefore it did not bode well for Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra's sons. And he said the nice analogy was given, that it's just like in a paddy field where the farmer is growing the rice, and when he sees unwanted plants, he pulls them out. So Prabhupada was saying that in an environment where Krishna is in the center, then the unwanted qualities within the heart are pulled out. So if we're in an environment where Krishna is in the center, then this is very auspicious, and we'll become purified just by staying in the environment. We become purified, because Krishna's just like the farmer who pulls out the weeds. We're going to have our anattas pulled out. So these are some points of consideration. Any comments or questions?